Well, good morning. Today's message that I'd like to present for you today is a collaboration, not of just my own, but it's with my wife, Viella, who I want to thank for her love and support and assistance in crafting today's presentation. And I'm going to be talking about my learning and understanding of the phrase, "We are one." Now, I don't ever remember hearing those words before all of the years that I was growing up in other religions throughout my time, until I started attending New Thought, Ancient Wisdom, Spiritual Communities. And when Viola and I and our son Jared started attending this church back in the spring of 2001, those words became more a part of my life. They were comforting, and I didn't feel alone. But what does it mean to live this phrase, that we are one? I'd like to share with you a video about someone who knows.
There's a wonderful paper by Shelton Hahn, who's one of my three favorite philosophers, called The Foundation of Morality. There he asks exactly the question that you've asked. How is it that a human being can so participate in the peril and or pain of another that without thought, spontaneously, he sacrifices his own life to the other? How can this happen? That what we normally think of as the first law of nature, namely self-preservation, is suddenly dissolved and there's a breakthrough. In Hawaii, some 4 or 5 years ago, there was an extraordinary adventure that represents this problem. There's a place there called the Pali, where the winds from the north, the trade winds from the north, can break you through a great ridge of rocks and of mountain, and they come through the great blast of wind. The people like to go up there to get their head blown around and so forth, or to commit suicide, you know, like jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. Well, the police car was on its way up the early little road that used to go up there, and they saw just beyond the railing that keeps cars from rolling over, a young man actually clearly about to jump and prepare himself to jump. Police car stopped. The policeman on the right jumps out to grab the boy and grabs him just as he jumped and was himself being pulled over and would have gone over if the second cop hadn't gotten around, grabbed him, and pulled the two of them back. There was a long description of this. It was a marvelous thing in the newspapers at that time. And the policeman was asked, why didn't you let go? I mean, you have lost your life. And you see what happened to that man. This is what's known as one-pointed meditation. Everything else in his life dropped off. His duty to his family, his duty to his job, his duty to his own career, all of his wishes and hopes for life just disappeared, and he was about to go. And his answer was, I couldn't let go. If I had, and I'm quoting almost word for word, if I'd let that young man go, I could not have lived another day of my life. How come? Schopenhauer's answer is, this is the breakthrough of a metaphysical realization that you and the other are one, and that the separateness is only an effect of the temporal forms of sensibility of time and space. And our true reality is in that unity with all life. It is a metaphysical truth that becomes spontaneously realized because it's the real truth of your life. The policeman didn't know who that young man was. Schopenhauer said, in small ways, you can see this happening every day, all the time. This is a theme that can be seen moving life in the world, people doing nice things for each other.
When I saw that, I was really touched. I still am. That police officer was the hands and the feet of a good and loving God. without thinking, he claimed his oneness with the jumper, a total stranger. He didn't know the man's politics. He didn't know his religions. He didn't know his beliefs or thoughts about things. But he knew innately, instinctively, that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. And he wanted to help. Nice words. Great phrases to put on a poster. Perfect short little affirmations to write on a post-it note and stick to your bathroom mirror. They're intoxicating phrases for an uplifting song or a prayer. Soothing balms for the wounds that are caused by codependency and the addictions that follow. But in all honesty, when push comes to shove, I mostly see people recreating and projecting those wounds when working in groups. My first experience living as we are one came when Viola and I chaperoned and attended Unity Regional Teen Camps with our son from 2004 through 2011. And on almost every drive, when we were coming back home, the teens would ask, how come our life at home be like what we just experienced in camp? Why can't it be like that? Because we had been working and living and playing and living as one in those camps. What made those camps different from our everyday lives at the time that we were sharing? That we were very diligently practicing intent. We individually took responsibility for projecting what we wanted to come back to us. During those camps, we suspended judgment. We made space in our hearts for the counselor or the team that would pull us out of our individual comfort zones. We looked and found the divine within them. We sent out a vibe that we were willing to look past our differences and go heart to heart. In essence, we were discovering the field of quantum physics, because we were all sharing the same energy field. We took responsibility for what we were contributing to that energy field. And even with these amazing glimpses of what we are one truly means, I'd come back home and end up climbing right back up on the pedestal that my ego had built for me, thinking that I was truly living as one. Now I just came from the camps. Until someone would cut in front of me when I was leaving church. or some politician, or a political group, or a neighbor, or a corporation, or even a family member did or said something that I disagreed with. Our world is presently providing us more than enough opportunities to decide how I am going to relate to the words, we are one. Amid the political divisions, fear, and anger, I'm getting the opportunity to ask, am I going to let my ego attack and make judgments and be fearful of what is happening? Or am I going to exercise my responsibility to work with my thoughts? Am I going to stop othering? Now, most of us have grown up with some type of or amount of dysfunction of some kind. Wounded egos judge to gain self-esteem and more one-upmanship. But there's something else inside of me, divine and whole, that I can work with. I have to stop and make a conscious choice which mind I'm going to be living with. As an example, I just read the past week about one of the largest egg-producing companies in the United States that just released its revenue figures. In the past year, its income has increased by 500% from the prior year. Even though it's estimated that only 15%, although that's a big number, of the chicken population that lays eggs in this country have been eradicated in the past 4 months due to the bird influenza pandemic there, the price of eggs has increased over 250%. Obviously, this increase is not solely due to the bird flu. When I read that, I found myself getting angry and judgmental. I took a deep breath, and then I took the company's leaders and myself into thoughtful prayer. I realized they're acting out of a feeling, a sense of lack and greed. And if I'm going to be honest, so have I in various times throughout my life. I ask myself, do I believe there is enough? Seeing our commonality helped me hold them in love and forgiveness. I literally had to tell myself to release my anger and fear consciously. George, pray for healing yourself and them, for everyone who was taught scarcity thinking. We're all humans struggling with the same consciousness in varying degrees. As Thich Nhat Hanh wrote, without fear, we are able to see clearly our connection to others. Without fear, we have more room for understanding and compassion. Without fear, we are truly free. Now, I began noticing over these past several years that I haven't been feeling or acting that we are one. I've been reacting with anger and fear and frustration. I found myself judging and attacking and creating the us versus them situation, allowing these occurrences to light my trash can, as Vi likes to put it. All of this simply created more fear, more anger, and more frustration within me. I was adding to the very chaos that I was seeing and experiencing. Well, I've learned A Course of Miracles teaching is true. Love and fear cannot coexist. To quote Ernest Holmes, the author of The Science of Mind, we are a unity and cannot hope to experience the beneficial results of prayer if mentally and emotionally we are a house divided against itself. So what about this chaos I'm seeing and feeling in the world? Well, we are all in a doctorate level laboratory for our spiritual beliefs. Do I really believe and think and live that God is good? Do I really believe that there's an all-knowing, omnipresent, all-loving power at work in all things? Do I believe that God is acting in all things and that God is good all of the time? I know these aren't words that you've never heard before. Can I stay curious instead of engaging in attack and fear and judgment? Or am I going to go out there and rant and rave and add to the anger and the hate and the chaos in this world? And then come back to my place of worship on Sunday and look for pretty band-aids. Are these phrases simply a magical elixir I'm hoping will eliminate the pain, that I'm experiencing from my own fear, addictions, and past wounds that these negatives I perceive have caused in my life? I'm not talking about putting my head in the sand and pretending that negative things don't happen, at least from my perspective. What I'm talking about is how I handle that perspective and how it impacts me, and thus how it impacts the world. I can believe the world's going to hell in a handbasket, or I can believe that crisis precedes emergence. Things always look like they're falling apart before a new and better paradigm comes and replaces it. I do believe that God is good in acting in all things. I can believe that God works in mysterious ways. Daniela Laporte, Canadian author, wrote, "When the world's vibration reaches a critical mass, a certain mass frequency, everything that seems unlike God, polarity, opposition, separation, and fear, that has been hiding in the shadows, bubbles to the surface. Unworkable paradigms are falling apart, gasping their last breaths and fighting for survival. My job is to stay in alignment with my higher power, to help create a vibration that welcomes this new and better paradigm. I can only do this if I stay out of fear and worry and practice faith, forgiveness, and love." You know, I can believe that actually these times are wonderful. They're inviting me to spiritually grow up, to mature and be responsible for my thoughts, my perceptions, and my reactions. This is the perfect time to stop myself from projecting the past or jumping into fearful future scenarios that haven't even occurred. Metaphysicians talk about the power of the spoken word. When Viola said that my heart is broken over a period of a few weeks, she developed a heart murmur. It was temporary, but when she reframed the entire situation and stopped saying, "My heart is broken," it went away. When she termed another feeling an event that felt like I was getting kicked in the gut, she developed a hernia. And surgeons had to repair that. How are you talking about current events? I believe these times are demanding we be mindful of our spoken word and our thoughts. Are you monitoring what outcomes you're calling for with your thoughts and words? We can't help the world if we live in fear, hate, or separation. As Michael Beckwith said, the world does not evolve when people gather around to commiserate about doom and gloom. It evolves through the coming together from creativity, beauty, and love to express. Is it easy? No. No. It takes great discipline and practice. Lots of practice, all the time. It takes diligent prayer and meditation and forgiveness of self and others. And when I get riled up, and I do, I go to my meditation cushion. This is how I get active. Meditation and prayer are not inactions. At the minimum, I shed my fear. I let go of my anger. I forgive myself and others for being human. I stop judging and attacking. I find compassion. I feel calmer. And I believe the words of Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Jesus. You know, when Jesus arrived on this planet, the Jewish people were under the weight of 613 commandments and laws written in the Torah. So, when someone was frightened or irritated by this spiritual, political upstart walking around and talking, decided that they would like to test Jesus by asking, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment of the law?" You know, Jesus replied, he said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment." But he didn't leave it at that. And then he said, "The second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." And all the law and prophets hang on these two commandments. Two. He understood innately what quantum physics is proving. We are all interconnected. We're all one on this planet. What we put out into the world comes back at us. And that's what I learned in those teen camps. Would you want someone to speak to you the way you're speaking to that driver that just cut you off on the freeway? Or how about the news person that's delivering the latest frustrating event that you think is frustrating and you're hearing about it? Now, those other people feel your energy, even if they haven't physically heard you. So does your body. Synthesizing all of this learning, Viella came up with the idea of simply setting aside 10 minutes a day, 10 minutes, to think and hold every situation, every person, every idea or belief that creates within us anxiety, confusion, anger, excuse me, that always light my trash can. And visualize them surrounded with love and forgiveness. She calls this total love for 10 minutes at 10. And we've started doing this. I've even set a little alarm on my phone every day at 10 a.m. It kind of goes off to remind me. And even if I can't do it right then, I'm aware of it. So that when I have the time, when I have nothing else going on, I can sit and think that way. Just to pause and meditate, pray, and hold these irritating and angering and fearful situations and people in love. You know, whenever I do this, I find a new depth of self-love, of self-forgiveness, self-respect, and peace. What a gift! What a blessing to me and to the world. I am doing as Gandhi did. I just saw it over there hanging on the wall. I am going to be the change. I am being the change that I wish to see in this world. I am doing what Martin Luther King said. I want to be the peace that I want to see in this world. In conclusion, if anything I've said today makes sense, I'd invite you to take these next few minutes to get comfortable and conscious about what you would like to put into the quantum field that we all share. and get comfortable. Take a deep breath or two. You know, the power of prayer and positive thought and meditation, it's boundless. Dr. Hugh Len was a therapist in the 1980s who was assigned to a criminally insane hospital ward in Hawaii. And he had learned and practiced the art of Ho'oponopono. Simple phrases that would say, I'm sorry, I forgive you, thank you, I love you. And for the entire period of time that he was there, it was an uncontrollable place. He did not meet with any of those patients, those inmates. What he did is he would sit in his office, read a file, think and hold it within him, and recognize his connection to that person. He would look at them and say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what pain I may have caused and what pain you have caused. And I forgive you. I forgive me. I love you. And I thank you for being able to connect with you. And within a year or two, they had to close the ward because they had no more inmates. He had no more patients there. He was healing them as he healed himself. So I would like you to sit in a comfortable place inside and notice that right next to you is sitting your mentor, your special person. Perhaps it's somebody from your own life, someone maybe you had met in your past. Maybe it's somebody from history, but it's someone that you want to have sitting next to you. And you look at them, and they look at you. And that mentor says to you, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the pain that I've caused you. And I'm sorry for the pain you're experiencing. Whether it's whatever failures you've had in your life, or the successes and triumphs. I recognize these shortcomings because I have them too. And I forgive you. I hope you forgive me as well. Gosh, I love you. And you feel that love. And you say back to that mentor sitting next to you, I love you. Thank you. Thank you for being a part of me and feeling me. And as you look down, you notice that there's a bowl that's sitting right in your lap. And as you were going through this experience with your mentor, it was filling up with love and recognition and connection in the human spirit. God's in there. You're a part of God. And then I want you to look across the room. And sitting on the other side is someone that you do not like, that you are frustrated by, that you are perceiving as causing your own pain and anger. And look at them. And if they look at you, Now you become the mentor. Share what you just experienced. I'm sorry for the pain that I may have caused you and the pain that you may have caused others. I forgive you. I forgive myself. I love you. I love me. Thank you. And you take that bowl and you gently slide it across to them. Take a deep breath. Come back here in this room and thank you for the opportunity that you have allowed me to share today.